A-Up friends, how's it going? Matt here. You're listening to a special bonus roundtable episode of Looking Sideways. Thanks for tuning in. I think you're going to enjoy it. The topic of this is how to pitch and how to get paid. It's a panel discussion, a little bit different from what I normally do. More in line, like I say, with the roundtable episodes that I release every now and again. And it's really interesting. So if you're a creative or somebody that's looking to get paid through what they what they're passionate about, then stay tuned. But before we start, I just want to quickly mention my new thing, Housekeeping Corner Discount Club, which I launched the other week. So I put a poll on one of my 10 Things newsletters asking people if they wanted discounts from the brands that I work with, because I'll let you into a little secret. People in the industry, which is where I make my living, don't pay for stuff. They get stuff free or they get discounts from brands. So all I'm really doing here is sharing the wealth with listeners and readers. So yeah, I've joined forces with a lot of the brands that I work with, either through Looking Sideways or All Conditions Media, to offer said discounts. Head over to either www.wearelookingsideways.com or lookingsideways.substack.com and head for the bit marked HKC Discount Club. Should all be self-explanatory, but I just do want to big up DB today for kicking things off with a huge 15% discount for listeners and readers of Looking Sideways. Enter the code Looking Sideways at checkout or head to dbjourney.com/lookingsideways and it'll be added at checkout. It does count as an advert. I mean, I get that, but you know, I'm not doing the whole, hey, so let me tell you about these DB bags, because that'd be silly, wouldn't it? Anyway, like I say, this episode that you're about to listen to is one of the round tables, and this is a creative exchange, as we've been calling them, organised by my pal John Weaver at DB. I've been really enjoying them. They're such a brilliant idea, hat tip John, that I can't believe more brands aren't doing stuff like this, really, because you can see how desperate people are for this knowledge on the calls. The premise is really simple. DB gather together some of their ambassadors and creatives, which is obviously where I come in, to form a loose panel to discuss that week's topic. Then we extend the invite to people on the mailing list, and through Looking Sideways, I invite people. We'll jump on a link and then we see where we end up. And the one you're about to listen to is about a topic close to my heart, or if you'd like, something I bang on about all the time, as John Weaver said at the start of this one, how to pitch and how to get paid properly. Now, Looking Sideways Substack regulars will know that, inspired by the extremely high-profile UK conference that asked me to speak at their 300 quid a ticket to 20k sponsorship package event for free because it would offer me great networking opportunities. I have indeed been banging on about this for a while now through various Housekeeping Corner episodes, blogs, and so on. And I make no apologies for that, as the 100-odd people who join this call, as you're going to see, prove, all of them passionate, smart, desperate to learn more about how to establish their own creative careers. There is a huge appetite for opinion and knowledge about this stuff. So that's the discussion you're about to listen to with me, the great Cali Vanula, DB's John and Marcus, and various people chipping in with different questions. Big up Cali for the insights, John for the idea and for getting me involved. And to everybody on the call, it was super interesting. And like I said, I'm really enjoying them. I'll be back at the end. But in the meantime, here's me and the DB gang with this creative exchange. Enjoy.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. This is, I believe, our 13th creative exchange. We've got into a pretty good habit over the winter now of doing these every month. We did a few in person last summer. The last couple have been really good. We had one about drone photography with Tobias. We had one with Matt the last month. What was yours about last month? I've completely forgotten what we did last time.
It was about travel in the age of the climate emergency, basically, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Which I was supposed to as a podcast today, but I've not got around to it. Sorry about that. I'll be next week now.
All good. So this subject today is something that we've probably been asked to do more than any other subject that we've ever approached on this. I think whenever we've done these, especially with photographers and filmmakers, people stay on and they always ask questions of the guests. And it always revolves around how to pitch for work, how to get paid for work, how to know your value. And so for this one, many of you will know Matt's got a podcast. And if you ever listen to Housekeeping Corner, he bangs on about this at the end of everyone, about how someone's asked him to do some work for free and how he's refused it. So Matt has got a good background in how to pitch, how to get paid, how to garner this kind of work. And we also reached out to Kelly Vanilla, who is in Canada. Kelly is a snowboarder, a surfer, creator. We worked together for Nike. She went out and shot a whole bunch of content for me a few years ago. And we also played on a football team together, which was called the Portland Tinders, which I do believe is probably the greatest name of any football team ever created.
That is a good name. The Tinders.
Portland Tinders, yeah, based on obviously Portland Timbers. So so to start this, I was just wondering if everyone could just in the chat jump in and type in where you're watching from tonight. Let's start with there. And maybe Callie, you can just introduce yourself whilst everyone is doing that, where you are, your background, etc., so they can learn more about you.
Global.
Awesome. So I'm Callie Vanular. I am typically located in British Columbia, Canada. For work, I do many, many jobs. I am a photographer, a creative, a snowboarder. I've modeled, I've worked in marketing so I've worked with brands kind of on every single aspect you can, production, and with brands like Nike, with John. I've worked at Lululemon, Destination Canada, Destination Oregon, so a lot of tourism boards. I also have like experience with influencer on a personal scale and then influencer on a global scale as well. So a typical millennial creator that grew up with the internet that's been freelancing for over 20 years. So a very extensive background in pitching large and scale jobs, startups and corporate.
Nice. So while we talk of millennial influencers, many of you will know Marcus Olsen, who is on the call. Marcus was last night telling us how he got free paint for his new apartment. Marcus is also going to answer a few questions about this. In his day job, when he's not working with us, he's also shooting generally into the light and doing it in order to get some free goods / payment on the way back. Tin is also here, and Matt, maybe you should introduce yourself as well, because there's obviously a bunch of new people who haven't been on these calls before.
Yeah, sure.
And then maybe you can kick us off.
Yeah. So kind of like Callie, I've been at this a long time now. You can probably tell I'm a bit older than Callie. So I've been kind of pitching to make a living for 30 years, frighteningly. So I started my career as a freelance journalist, and that was in 1994. And I still work as a journalist. So I'm still pitching as a journalist. So I do that. And over the years, I have written for, most newspapers and magazines around the world and websites, and have kind of watched the shift from analog to digital and the impact that's had on your ability to get paid, let's say.
Nice.
My day job is I run a marketing agency, which is quite a big thing now in terms of we've got 15 staff, we've got about 15 clients. And basically in that role, I pitch for a living. That's what I do. Really, don't really do any work anymore, just basically pitch. And I get pitched constantly by people who either want to sell me something or they want to work for us or they want to be, people that they might be photographers that want to work on campaigns that we work on and so on. And then finally, as John said, I work as a podcaster, which is a bit of a chance for me to spout off about the things that I enjoy on that. This topic. So that's my background. Sorry, John, go on.
I was just gonna say, and just before you launch headlong into it, Matt, again, since this is a question that most people have always got questions about, in the chat, if everyone could, if there was like one question you would love answered about this as a topic, throw it in the chat now, and then we'll see if we get to it as we go through the evening. But I think it's a good starting point for everyone to think about, like, what would some good subject area that you'd like to get to.
Well, I think what we're going to do is we're going to split this into two parts. We're going to split this into like the pitching part and the getting paid part. But I imagine most people on this call have got loads of questions about this, so just whack them in whenever you want and we'll try and get to them. Because obviously what this is about is try to help people like navigate this world, really. So yeah, I'm a bit distressed to read that Tin from DB wasn't even born when I started pitching. That's how old I am. But yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this stuff, really. I always have been, because I do think that generally the creative industries do devalue people's work and worth. I think that there is a culture of asking people, especially at the beginning of their careers, to work for free. It's particularly a problem in the kind of snow, skate, surf worlds, which tends to say it doesn't have budgets to do this, but kind of does have budgets, really. So there's a bit of a cultural thing going on there. And I think that one of the reasons that I'm quite interested in this topic is that if you don't pay people properly, you tend to get the same voices talking about the same things over and over again. You can certainly see that, I think, in surf, skate and snow media, where you do tend to see a lot of people who've been, and I would count myself as one of those people who's been doing it for a while, you know.
So let's get into the first part then, Matt.
Yeah. Well, the first part is pitching, and we wanted to talk about this from the brand perspective. So John is CMO of DB. And Marcus and Tin also work for DB. So I wanted to understand firstly how you see pitching, because you're obviously on the receiving end of pitches a lot from people who want to work with you. So what, I guess the first question I've got for you is, like, what are the common mistakes that you see when people, this is for you, John, when people are approaching you, pitching you for work, what common pitfalls do you see?
Probably the first one would be, and there's obviously been, you know, let's call it Instagram tourism or whatever, but like, there is a lot of, and we experienced this when we did the DB fund last year or the year before, a lot of people who are like, hey, me and my friends are going to go to Bali and we'd love you to pay us some money and we'll document it and we'll get you some coverage. Or obviously at the moment we're going to go to Iceland and do a road trip around Iceland and pay us some money and we'll do it. There's a lot of me and my girlfriend or boyfriend live in a van and we'll, you know, we need some money for a road trip and we'll tag you in all of our content. It's just not that original. I suppose just unoriginal pitches is generally one of the things that I see quite a lot.
We got that a lot with the DB fund, didn't we, that we did? Like, I think you mentioned that. Like, so we did this DB fund summer 22. And the idea behind that was to try and give people a platform to get into the creative industry. So we had, I think we had the price, it was decent. You know, you were going to get mentoring. It was like €5,000 to start your project. I think we got about 350 entries. I reckon 300 of them were basically like, I want to go on a holiday. Please, can you pay for it? The ones that stood out were the ones that had, firstly, an original story idea, which is what we were kind of looking for. And the ones that communicated that story idea in an original way. Like the ones, can we go on a holiday, please? We kind of ignored, didn't we? And then we quite quickly whittled it down to like, all right, this person's A, got an interesting idea, and B, has communicated it in an interesting way, which I think we'll come back to. Callie, so you have worked, I believe, brand side as well, right? Or you've certainly got a lot of experience from this. So could you speak to some of the common mistakes you see when people are kind of engaging in pitching for work from brands?
Totally. Yeah. So I've worked for startups and for larger companies. And I notice, even I own my own brand now, I get like 20 pitches a day. And to your point, like, most of them are terrible. And even when they pitch me and then they ask me what my budget is. So like, if you're doing that with a small brand, if you approach someone, and you're asking them to then just randomly give you money.
Yeah, because one of the things we were talking about earlier, wasn't it, was like, what a good pitch is telling you that it's going to help you solve a problem, right? That you mm-hmm. might have. Is that something that you can recognize, Callie?
Yeah. And that is most important. And I think I'm seeing all these questions come in on the side. Yeah. Like how do you do a good pitch? How do you even pitch? Where to start? And I think that is like a trifold kind of question. It's not just about one pitch. Even like John in the intro, like we played soccer together. So we were playing soccer. He said he had a problem at Nike that he needed to solve. And then in that got into talking, and then I got into a pitch, and then we started working together. So I don't think it's just like making a pitch. And that is what I've noticed for small brands and large brands, is that people just kind of ask for money, or they just send a pitch and they leave it at that. And I think that's like the biggest issue.
Because you can see that from the questions, actually, can't you? There's a lot of questions like, how long can a deck be? Like, you know, there's a lot of questions about like the deck, the delivery, like the thing that you, and I don't think it's really about that personally. I think personally it is about what problem you try to prove that you can solve. So I'll give one example from my experience. So when I was setting up my podcast, which was 7 years ago, I did everything on my own. Like I produced it, recorded it, edited it. And because I didn't have any money, obviously. And then when it started to take off, I did a collaboration with quite a well-known brand, and they gave me some money. So I was like, okay, I'm going to invest that into the podcast. And I'd had a lot of people pitching me to edit the podcast, which was something I really needed, because it was taking me a day an episode and it was really fucking boring. And so like, it was just, for me, it was just like dead time. And basically, the one person who's still my editor 6 years later, she pitched me and she sent me a cold email, and she said, basically, hey, how's it going? That looks like a lot of work. And then I really like what you do. And I've obviously, and she was clear that she'd like listened to it and she knew what it was. And she basically said, I can edit your podcast for you for cheaper than you can do it, and it'll save you time and it'll be less hassle for you. And I was a bit like, I am all ears. How much are you going to charge me? And she was like, oh, it'll be this. And I was like, well, I can afford that. And I was like, you're hired. Like, done deal. Because she saw, that was an email. She didn't send me a deck. She didn't, like, I didn't even speak to her. I could just tell from the tone, from the problem that she was solving for me, that she knew what she was doing. Obviously, I got to do a bit of work to prove that it was fine. But it was the problem that she was solving for me. I think it's really important that has to be a first step when you're thinking about this, Marcus.
No, I just wanted to chime in there, because like both, I remember when I was working at Red Bull and the pitches that we get, I really resonate with this, because I think a lot of people, when they pitch, even if it's a deck or an email, it's all about like what they are going to do. And I think the ones you normally listen to is when people, you know, have looked at your brand, or, you know, looked at a problem and presents a solution to it and understands, and I've done the research. I was on a very similar call last week with Chris Burkhardt, and he said the same thing. Like, it's all about reading up on the brand's language, understanding where they are
kind of
in their scenery and what you can do to help. Then normally people are better at listening. And that's what I think is a general thing we've seen when we get pitches. It's a lot about me and I. And of
that was an interesting one. Like when we hired Sam Moody to make Pat Kevin Chase, like he called and was just like, he didn't actually pitch. He managed to get a number from someone. And then he was like, hey, I make sort of documentary storytelling stuff. You guys haven't done this, and I think you probably should look at it. And then from there, it kind of just, we tested working together, and then it was like, oh, this is actually quite a nice fit. And it was less of a formal pitch, but it was probably looking at us as a brand of what we're missing. And I think any brand has areas that you can probably look at and say, oh, they're missing out completely here. And I think that's quite a nice way of looking at it sometimes.
Yeah. 10.
Yeah. I would say also we live in an area where everything is digital, but I think also like working from the office here and there and actually receiving something, I think it has more and more value. And I think when it's not just about email or about a PDF that you attach, but like if you actually send something, like I've heard a story where someone was trying to pitch an idea for a protein brand, and like he actually bought their protein package and like did his own sticker and added like the idea and send them that box to the office, and they were like, okay, that's something so new, like something that it's really stood out of all emails. So I think never forget about the offline world as well. It's in today's life.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of points have been made there, which are really important. Like the point you just made there, basically, is like you got to stand out. Like, you know, like that, because most people are like, I run a really small agency, and I must get, like you, Callie, I must get 30 pitches a day. I'm not even joking. Like, and you know, so God knows what proper brands are getting. You know, it must be hundreds. You know, if we put a job up, we get like 100 applicants. Like it's super competitive. And in the same way with the DB fund, like 90% of them are not going to be very good. And particularly when you come to like the creative and the marketing worlds, like there's a lot of received wisdom. You know, there's a lot of people following what they think are trends. They think like what you should be doing. You should be doing this because everyone's doing it. You know, the minute everyone's pitching me AI, like, hey, do you want an AI thing? Like, you know, because that's just like what everyone's talking about right now. I just think it's really important to stand out, like tone, language, style, in terms of your point 10 about like how you present the ideas in an interesting way. Like with my podcast, I get pitched like every day for guests. And most people, I could just tell them not listen to it. They don't know who my guests are. You know, it'll be like, do you want to feature this like banker? And I'm like, well, no, why would I want to do that? Like, that's not what I do. And it always astonishes me that people don't take the time to actually, like, if you can prove that you've, like Burkhard said, that you've researched it, you know the tone, you know the language, you know what they're doing, like Sam Moody did, you've not done a documentary, have you thought about this, that this fits with your brand, you know, you obviously make content, you will stand out. That is a really easy win, because 90% of people are just going to come up with something really random that's just going to get ignored. So you can do that really quite straightforward due diligence at the beginning to just immediately make yourself stand out before you even get to like the idea, and before you even get to like the way, whether it is actually a problem that needs solving as well. I think the phrase is like spray and pray in the sales world. You know, like make it a numbers game, like send out like 1,000 emails and you might get like one person that bites. I'm assuming like most people here are looking at this from a creative perspective, like looking at all the questions, you know, probably filmmaking, probably some influencer stuff, probably travels, probably people that want to get sponsored on this call, probably people that want to write, it's probably photographers. So it's creative, really. And you've got to be calculated. You've got to be quite focused on how you approach people. Another thing I was quite interested in asking you, Callie, because before the call, we were talking about the importance of also like having your own thing, like having your own, whatever that might look like. You used the phrase like your life resume, because obviously your career is like, you know, you said you've modeled, you're a snowboarder, you've worked production, you've done some influence, you've done a lot of stuff basically. How is having all this different experience as your career's progressed, how has that helped you when it comes to pitching?
Yeah, so like having a social media presence obviously helps if you're trying to pitch that you are a photographer or a videographer. I know that there's old school thought, and I appreciate that with photography, but people are casting off social media these days, with photography, video, even modeling. I got hired for a Verizon job just from Instagram, and the whole casting agency casted from the internet. So I think acting like you're above internet presence or social media is just kind of doing yourself a disjustice. And if you hate social media, like what Matt did, having a podcast and making his kind of reoccurring place where you can find him and learn more about him. It doesn't have to be Instagram or something visual. It could be any of the platforms. There's so many growing networks, but I think the reason of that is community and being able to be found and having proof of concept. Nobody will hire you if they've never seen what you've done, because there's 1,000 more people saying they can do it. So you really need to have like your resume out there. And for me, like, I've put a lot of, like, right when LinkedIn started, I made sure I was putting all my work out there. I've kind of moved past it now that it's become more of a social network, but you see people on LinkedIn getting so much work and recognition just because they're like talking about what they're doing for work. Because nobody knows what you're up to. There's too many people, and nobody cares about your everyday. So if you're not telling people about it, they don't know. And I think that's why you use podcasts, why you use social media. For me, I use Instagram a lot. And it's helped tremendously because it's kind of that like proof of concept. And just like finding more proof of concept. So like Behance or whatever you want to use.
And also what I was going to say is like, it's a viewpoint, isn't it? It's a perspective. You know, you've got a position, which is, I think, is also really important when it comes to like standing out. You know, I don't even particularly like if I'm going to work with somebody, whether it's through my agency or the other things that I do, I don't really care how big the audience is, to be honest. I don't really care, like, but what I do want is that someone's got a perspective, that they've got a view that sets them apart. They're doing something interesting, and you can see that from the presence. You can see that from the way that they're kind of talking about their work. And I do think it comes back to that kind of, you know, one of the questions here from Leah is like how to stand out. I mean, I think this is all answering that question, really. You know, like giving yourself the best chance by having a viewpoint, having a position, you know, having done the research, having looked at the way they talk, having looked at like the problem you might be able to solve, like those things. There's probably more. We haven't obviously got that much time today. They will help you stand out, and they will kind of, you know, give you a head start on people, even, you know, before you actually get to the work part. John, did you have any views on that from the brand side?
I was actually just, because there was a question here that I was interested in, which related to this from Tom, and I was just wondering if you could, Tom Bing, if you could just elaborate on this. The best way to show your work to potential brands or agencies and ways of pitching to steer clear of friend zoned.
Yeah, Tom, are you brave enough to get your mic on?
Hi, everyone. Here we go. On? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Tom, we got you.
Cool. Yeah, I think someone else has said it as well, like how... Like, you know, obviously you kind of start with like low hanging fruit, you know, some magazines or people that you know and some things that you can kind of like feel comfortable working with. But then it's like, how do you, someone said it, I think, as well, like, how do you then go back and say, yeah, like I've done that, but now I want to do this. Do you know what I mean? Or how, in that first instance, do you, because I think sometimes I have a problem where I'm super enthusiastic, I'm super passionate about, the, you know, if I'm pitching to something, it's because I absolutely love it and I'm really 100% behind that idea. Sometimes I think that can get a little bit confused, like, oh cool, you love this idea so much that you do it for very little, or you'll do it for product, or you know what I mean, like how do I, just wonder like the best way to just come across, tread that balance of being professional, you know, I've got a kid, I need to put food on the table, I do this for a job, no one else is paying my mortgage, and but I actually like really want to do this, and I'll do a, you know, a really, really good job and go above and beyond. But like, how do you tread that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. And I think it's a good point to sort of go to the second half of this, actually, because really what you're talking about there is how do I communicate my value, really, I think, you know, like, and that was kind of the, we'll do questions at the end, because obviously I know, like, we're half an hour in, and I understand that that's not the longest section on pitching, but the, you know, the second part of this is about getting paid. So we'll switch to this part, because what I'd put is value. You know, what it's about is understanding your value. And I think I'll just give a quick bit of context. Like, early on in your careers, like, it's quite easy to be taken advantage of for that, really. And I think that sounds a bit like what you're experiencing there. You know, you're a bit like, you're finding that the passion that you feel and that you'll communicate, and you're worried that people are going to take advantage of that. Like, well, this guy will do it for free, so I'm just going to get him to do it for free, you know? And I think it's fair to say that in the creative industries, like people do that. Like, they totally do that. Like, they do take advantage of that. And I think that that's a real pitfall in the early years. I'll just tell one quick story on that, because me and John have got a mutual friend called, and Mark Ruprelli, who's on the call as well, called Nathan Gallagher, who's an incredibly successful commercial photographer. And I called him up about 18 months ago for our agency, because we got asked to do a thing for the All Blacks. and we got asked to shoot the All Blacks basically. And I was a bit like, fucking hell. All right. Who do I know that can, that, that can deal with a, like that level of like professional talent? Cause it was like, you got an hour with the All Blacks. You got to do this. So I phoned Nathan. I was like, Nath, I've got this gig. And he, before I'd even said, what is it? He went, you can't afford me. I was like, wow. Okay. That, and I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, I'm not even like, just, you can't afford me. And I was like, wow, that is, how have you ended up there where you can? And he's like, I know my value and I know like what value my work has. So that has won me loads of work. And that means that I have the confidence to know that you phoning me means you can't afford me. And he's like, I will give you a number of someone you can afford though. But he knows his value. And that's like, that, that comes from experience. It comes from understanding the market, which is really important because obviously certain markets, I mean, he works for like Formula One brands, so that he can charge them more than he can charge DB, you know? So that's really important. And what we were talking about earlier is like, I personally think you have to ask the question about that value. Like you have to challenge it in a way, not like get shirty, but you have to kind of work out your, what your value is. And then you have to look at the scenario that you're in and you have to question if it meets your value. Because I think that people that say they can't afford to pay creatives, which happens everywhere in the world has got this story. They either can't afford it, in which case they've got a problem with their business model. Because if you can't afford to pay somebody, which is my situation with Nathan, why are you asking him? You know, you can't afford him. Like I didn't go back to Nathan and say, yeah, but can you just do it for cheap? I was just a bit like, oh, right, I can't afford you. Okay, I'll find someone I can afford. So there could be that. Or if they say they can't afford it, they're kind of lying because they can afford it and they don't want to pay it. There's only really two scenarios there. And if I'm pretty convinced that people try and take advantage of creatives in the early stages of their career because it's what it's always been done, because that's what happens, because you can say to somebody at the beginning of their career, well, I'll give you a free bag, or I'll give you a surfboard, or I'll give you a jacket, because that's how it's always been done. So everyone thinks, well, that's fine, I'll just do it. But it doesn't mean it is fine. It doesn't mean that it is right. So I kind of personally think everyone needs to get a bit more Nathan on this and like just at least understand where that line is for them. Your line, Tom, is going to be pretty different than Nathan's, clearly. You know, you're at a different stage of your career and you probably try to pitch different people, but you probably got an idea about how much you want to earn. You've probably got an idea what a successful career looks like for you in terms of like supporting your family and doing the things that you want to do. I think that's a really good starting point. I think that's a really good point to be thinking, like, what would a successful career here for me look like? Like in an ideal world, like what would I like to earn? And not like crazy, like, well, I want to earn 10 grand a week because that's what my mate Nathan's earning. But what does it actually look like? And then obviously you need to kind of cross-reference that, like I say, with the reality of the world that you're operating in. When Sam Moody went to John and pitched the documentary idea, you know, he's got to be realistic about what budgets a brand like DB has got. Like, you know, you can't go in there and basically come up with some ludicrous ideas. So this is like where the research part comes in. But there will be a sweet spot. There will be a sweet spot between like what you think your value is, what that brand can afford to pay. And the art of this is working out where you meet in the middle, essentially. Mm. Now, obviously, when you're Chris Burkhard, you don't have to do that. You just give him your price and people are going to want to work with you. He's earned the right to do that from his experience, from his profile, the stuff that Ali was talking about. That's the goal, to get there, you know, to have that experience, to have that really clear sense of your value so you can kind of call the shots. But until you get there, you need to, it's a constant process, this, of working out what your value is and where it meets what the value of the brand is. John?
Yeah, because I've asked Kelly this question numerous times in our career together. I normally say, hey, I need a photo shoot doing, or I need you to come on a call or whatever. Like, how do you handle it? Like, do you handle it based on the size of the client, how long you estimate you'd like to work with the client, how, and do you have fixed rates, or do you just go straight into, or do you vary it based on what you think the person can pay, Or I think I have an idea how you handle this, because it's probably how you handle this conversation.
It varies, and I don't have set rates. I have friends that are very strict with their rates, and I respect them for that. And everyone does it differently, I think, is what you learn. And everyone has a different threshold. So like Tom, you have like a mortgage and family to pay for it. And whenever someone asks me this, my like general rule is I set what I would want to make. If it's like a longer job, hourly or daily, and I set my bare minimum. So like what amount of money would I not work for? And this is like, if somebody offers me a horrible rate, like sometimes I'll be like, I'd rather pay you that to stay home. Like I'm good. It's a waste of my personal time to work for that rate. So figuring out like what that minimum is. So like how much do you need to cover all your bills? Like at any normal job, if you weren't a creative, like what hourly rate would you want? And what hourly rate would you be getting with your experience? I think is a big one. Cause if you are just starting out, you are not as good as your friend that's a commercial photographer. Those people get paid a lot of money because if they only have 1 hour to create assets, they will create the assets. And I think that's the difference with rates, is like knowing actually how good you are. It's the same with like any type of creative. You pay a model a lot of money, like a very expensive model, them in front of your lens is an entirely different experience than paying like a friend down the street. So I think finding your baseline, and so that's what I do. I find like, what is the number I will not work below? Then I always pitch like 3 times higher than that, and then find somewhere in the middle. And that's kind of like how I've based it off of. And now with 20 years of experience, that number's way higher than it was when I was like 15 running social media for brands. So that grows as you grow. And I think it is market research. I ask people all the time what they're pitching. And I think having like a community that you can kind of just be transparent with, like I have so many friends on Instagram that like Adidas, for instance, hit up my friend that lives in Norway about doing this huge campaign. And she like DM'd like 7 of us, like, what should I ask for? And we have this like little community and we just chat about it and we're open about it. And it's like, well, this is what this job paid the other day. This is what this model got. And then you can kind of find your baseline.
So, when was the last time you said no, Callie?
I mean, I say no like every day now. And again, that's like a privilege of people being interested to even ask you to work. I have learned that if I take jobs that do not pay me the rates that I want, I do a bad job. And I don't want to do a bad job. So that is where I never go below my rate, because if I take a job for less, then I'm kind of annoyed and then my work isn't very good. And then I don't do the best job because the entire experience is kind of just aggravating. So I don't go below my baseline rate anymore because I want to be paid for my work. I want to be paid well, and I'll do a good job if they respect me kind of equally. So now I just say no. And more jobs come. And I feel like when you put that out there, like you hold your baseline, like you get better jobs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because it's quite rare as well, isn't it, that people actually do it? You know, that people kind of stick to their guns. At this point in your career, do you ever do anything for like the experience?
Oh, yeah. And I know that people like hate on this. And I made my career off of picking and choosing when to do work for free, because I don't really look at it as work for free. I look at it as learning. So like, if I want to do something I've never done before, people pay to go to school. So like, if you're working for free, I just look at it as like education. So if it's a person I really want to work with, like say a mentor was like, hey, I need a photo assistant. There isn't any budgets for like or actually I did this in LA like a month ago. My friend was shooting in the cover of a magazine where she's a high-end commercial photographer. She does not get paid her day rate for this. I forget the name of the magazine, but either way, high fashion with a, we'll call her like a D-list celebrity. She's on like a couple TV shows. And I never assisted on a shoot like that. You know, and I was like, yeah, I'll be your assistant. Because for me, I was like, this is exciting. I've never been on a shoot like this. I don't want any expectations. And because I'm not getting paid, nobody expects anything either. So then I just get to be a fly on the wall, learn about like high-end fashion and see how she works. And for me, that's like free school. So again, it's like your personal threshold, but I totally think that you should work, or not work for free, but like intern or help out on shoots that you want to be on, because then you can like learn how to be on them in the future. And you meet the people when you're on the shoot, which is great.
Callie, there was a question there from Mark, which I think is actually a really good one. Should you pitch higher than you actually want, or should you try and be honest? Or like, you know, should you say, hey, this is what it is for a day, or is it like add this for camera rental and this thing and that thing and the other? Or is it just like straight up and down, this is what I need a day?
Oh, always pitch more. Basically, like the creative is always pitching more. The brand is always pitching less. There's always like a middle ground. I feel like no one ever tells you their top budget out the gate, because that's just like bad.
But should you have like an all-in fee, or should you have like a fee and then add on for like all of the extras, like whatever Mark usually throws on when he goes to film in Nazaré for us?
Yeah. I mean, that's dependent on the brand. Like, you can't do that to a small brand. Like, a small brand is hiring you because you own the camera. Like, they're not trying to pay for you to rent a Red. That's all situational. On large shoots, it's very expected that there's gear rental. Like, larger commercial, bigger brands, that's super normal. I'd gauge it off if there's a team. If there's a team of people on a shoot, that's when you can kind of add in all those things. But if it's a brand that's just hiring like very slim teams, adding in all these like rental fees and I think, again, that's just not researching the brand, not doing your due diligence to like read the room. You don't always need to have all this like extra stuff, especially in this climate. Like, people want like slim teams. And it's why like board sports, all of our friends from like snowboarding, surfing, anyone that creates media in that world, we're such a coveted group because we know how to like create very good content on slim teams and slim budgets. So I guess not letting that hold you back budget-wise, but knowing that that's why they're reaching out to you. And not like forgetting, I guess, that at your core.
I truly resonate with that. I think from the brand side as well, I think that's also the content people or the agencies that it's easier to work with, is when they understand kind of, you know, the expectations on how big a production is, and where, you know, if it is a social media production, you don't need to pitch in, you know, a huge amount of budget in gear rental. And I think that's also something that I think is really appreciated from the brand side, of like people once again doing the research and understanding on what level to kind of to put the effort level on everything from gear to if you need to charge for, you know, styling and all of that as well. Because if you're on a bigger shoot, that's expected. And then you can take the upcharge on that. I know Oscar is on the call, Buck, he's an automotive photographer. So he makes a big part of like, or some part of his fee as well on actually helping the agencies bring in, okay, I can take the light rental, I can take in stylist and stuff, and then he puts a surcharge on it and gets that in his fee. But that's kind of, you know, for the bigger teams and when you have a bigger shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sorry, Kelly.
I was just gonna chime. It's reading the room. Yeah, and I think there is like space to suggest it, like especially like as a female in action sports, most brands like won't bring in makeup or stylist, and there'll be like 15 looks. And so like I'll suggest like, hey, there's a lot of clothing, like having an assistant or a stylist would really help us like nail this shoot. So you can kind of push for things. But again, yeah, to Marcus's point, it's just like knowing why they reached out to you and kind of going from there.
Yeah, I mean, there's similar themes, aren't there? I mean, what you're again talking about there, Marcus, is like you want to work with people that know the problem you've got and can help you solve it in like the simplest way, really. You know, and it comes back to understanding, like, you know, to your point, Mark, you said it was almost like, can we be honest, wasn't it? You know, and I think you can. I think you can just ask, you know, you can just have a really transparent conversation about this stuff, whether, as Callie says, like asking peers who might be in a similar position, that you can then like sense check to get a gauge of like what the market value is. But also, like, it's quite rare that people are confident enough to discuss this stuff quite openly in meetings, you know, like, so I just normally ask people how much money they've got first off, like, and most of the time people are quite upfront with that. You know, they'll just be like, well, this is our budget, you know. And the more transparent you are and the more you're just open about it, people do tend to respond quite well to that. So I think it's like Callie's saying, there's no real hard and fast rules. It is just about like understanding the different scenarios, where you can push things, what your value is, giving yourself the best chance with all the things that we've been talking about, like the research, standing out, the problem that you're going to try and solve. It is all very connected. But I think the communication aspect of it that you're talking about is super important, really. Just having the confidence to stick your hand up and say, let's talk about this. John?
Yeah, I was just wondering, I know, Callie, you have a point of view on this as well, but Oscar, since you're on the call, you've obviously gone, well, you've obviously moved from Sweden to the US as well. So I would assume at some point you put a US tax on all the work you're doing as well. How have you sort of, how did you, like, I assume you've increased your pricing as you've gone over the last decade. How have you approached that? Or has it just been as you've got new customers, you've kind of gone up? And then I suppose afterwards, the same question for you, Callie, but Oscar, maybe not to put you on the spot and have you start talking about money in front of 107 people, but let's go.
No, I feel like it's a mix of, like, of course, when you level up and bigger shoots, you are allowed to charge more because you get more experience. Or, like, I feel like if the client is a small startup compared to Nike or like something like that, of course you can charge more, and they have more budgets or bigger budgets. So yeah, it's I feel like, yeah, you just gotta level up more to be able to charge more, obviously.
But Oscar, to John's question there, and Kaylee, then just ask again, or I want to ask you as well. But so, say that you worked for one client one time, how do you come back when they come back for another shoot? How do you take that? Like, do you keep the same rate, or how do you, as you know, you progress, you increase the rate?
I think that's been a hard part for me, and I think I would say like, sometimes it's been for me that I might have started with, let's see, just like one brand with their local office or something like that. And then the headquarter see those images and they're like, oh shit, this is great. And they hire me for bigger campaigns. And then that's pretty easy to just bump up your rate then. But then I've also lost clients because, like, okay, we've been working on it for a few years. I've stepped up with other people and now I want to increase my rate. And they say no to that. So it's, but I think parts of it is just like our career, like it's a journey. Sometimes you go, you can have a great client for a few years that you don't work with after that, but hopefully that gets replaced with someone else. Or at least that's how I see my career. That, like, I've had phases with different clients.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple of thoughts on this, because from the agency side, a common scenario that I get running a marketing agency is a small brand who says, hey, can you run a PR campaign for us? And we have got like a small amount of money, you know, for what that's worth. And if you do it and it goes well, then we'll increase the rate. I must have had that 20 times over my career. They've never increased the rate. Like, they've never done that. They've when the conversations come, they've actually just gone, oh, well, we don't want to work with you anymore. I think it's, from an agency client relationship, that's quite specific, but I've personally learned from that, those scenarios, to always go in with the right price and not expect it to change. You can certainly win more work around that, but the actual job, I think it's really hard in that dynamic to increase it. But I do have another example of that, where I did have to do this last year. So I'm doing a project with a big brand at the minute, which is a podcast documentary series. I completely underquoted that. So they basically were like, cool, let's do it. How much money do you want? And I was, I didn't have a clue. I was like, that much money? And they were like, cool, sounds good. And then I got like 6 months into the project and I was a bit like, fuck, I have not made any money on this. Like, so I kind of realized that I had to go back and ask him for double the money. And I'm lucky because I've got a good relationship with them, but I mean, I can see John's face, like, like, so I kind of, back to your point, Mark, like I kind of just had to come clean. You know, I just basically phoned them up and said, look, we need to have a chat about the rate. And they were like, oh yeah, I'm all ears, you know? And I was like, I need double the money. And they were like, okay, that's punchy. Why do you want that? And I was like, I just underquoted, you know, like, and I kind of know my value, you know, and I know, and it's going to be good. So I just, please can you give me more money? and they went for it. But I think the only reason they went for it is because I just was really transparent. You know, I just basically said, I got this wrong. You know, this is on me, but we still got a problem, you know. Similarly with that same client, they commissioned me to make a podcast series and I initially told them a price and then I went away and thought about it. And I went back and said, actually, I'm going to double that price. And they were like, whoa, okay, why are you doing that? And I was like, well, because I won't be happy with it. And I don't think it's the right value. And what I don't want to do is go come back to you in 2 years, and say, you know, this scenario that we're kind of talking about, can I have more money, please? I'd rather just have that conversation now. And they were like, okay. And again, they agreed. They were like, all right, well, let's do it that way. You know? So I think the point of both those stories is again, like, firstly, there's no hard and fast rules because, as I said at the start, I've been doing this a long time and completely fucked both of those scenarios up. But then when I realized they had it, basically, it was about communication, transparency, trust. You know, those things obviously go a long way in these conversations. Well, should we get some questions, John? What do you think? We got, it's 10 to.
Yeah, I was just going to say on that one, Callie, since you mentioned this, I think, would you say it's a problem or a benefit having good friends working for big clients?
Especially when it comes to
like coming back with new rates.
It can be a problem. It's kind of hit or miss. Like sometimes when you're too close with someone that works for a brand, it puts them in a really weird position. Like, I'm at a loss for words, but just kind of legally. You know, like all the anti-bribing, anti-whatever, like they are trying to be fair and biased as like an employee of a larger company. So sometimes having a friend in there, your friends like won't get you jobs because they don't want someone to be like, well, they hired this person because it's their best friend that they play soccer with. So it's kind of hit or miss. Also, being friends with someone, it's easier to have those honest conversations. Like the fact that Matt was able to get double the money twice, I'm like, he must be really good at chatting, because I've had scenarios where I underquote and I just have to grind my teeth and finish the job. And I just take that as like, okay, note to self, like that was way more work than I thought it was. I quoted bad. But sometimes you just have to be like, well, that's my fault. It's your job.
That's rare. That was a rare one. I've certainly had way more of examples like you're saying where I've got it wrong and it's just like tough shit. That's the deal, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what you learn the most as like a freelancer, is that when you negotiate a deal that didn't work for you, you'll know at the end of the job. And I think it's like those learnings of being like, wow, that was way more work than I thought it'd be, way more time. Like something I've learned with photography is just like putting a limit on re-edits, you know, like putting limits, setting boundaries so that the project doesn't get bigger than you quoted for. And these all kind of are learnings, like as you grow and you will mess up and you will make bad deals and you just kind of have to take it as a learning. Again, it's like you're just paying for schooling sometimes, you know. You make a bad deal and you're just like, well, that was a valuable lesson that I will just keep moving forward from.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened with us with the agreeing to work for small brands on the proviso that the price would go up. You know, I did that like 10 times. and then in the end, I was like, well, we're not going to do that again.
There's a good question here. Maybe everyone can. What? Well, how to pitch brands you would love to work with, but they seem to have go-to creatives. I think that's quite a good one. I suppose. Matt, you've probably, or I suppose Callie, like, are there brands that you've wanted to work with, and they always have the same people that you've approached?
Yeah, I mean that's quite common. I was telling some young photographers, like, if it's in action sports, the easiest way to get into a brand is to work with up and coming athletes. And I think that you can take that model elsewhere, but like, say, I don't know, Nike always uses the same person to shoot their campaigns. Like, do research on the up and coming athletes, because those athletes need content. Like, they are creatives too. Like, they need photos. So if you find someone else that has momentum and you link together, you can like be noticed by bigger brands together. And because, yeah, sometimes it's hard to like shake the club. There is like a club at every brand, and everyone works with kind of like the same people again and again. But talent is always changing. So that's like the easiest way to get in, I think.
Yeah, I mean, something interesting about that question is always like brands you'd love to work with. I mean, I think that's quite a thing, isn't it? That people, it's quite rare at the beginning of your career you get to be that choosy, I think, really. So I'm quite interested in that, like choosing brands on the basis that you'd love to work with them rather than like the likelihood that you can work with them. Because I think for me, that'd probably be a bit of a smarter play to think about, like, can I get work from these people ultimately, you know, because everyone wants to work for Patagonia and Arc'teryx at the minute, you know, but it's just quite unlikely you're going to get in there like at the beginning of your career, because they can choose, you know, they've got a million people they want to work with. So for me, I would probably look at that a little bit differently and think about, rather than like brands, a wish list of brands you'd love to work with, more like a wish list of brands you think you've got a chance of working with, which I would imagine would be quite different.
There's another question here. I think this is a lot of the first part. Should you aim for a pitch? This is from Andy. Should you aim for a pitch just to get a foot in the door and get a client on a call, rather than listing deliverables and pricing in that initial message deck? Maybe I can also take a go at this one, because I suppose as the brand, or Marcus, you can.
Do it. You go first.
No, I was just going to say, I think sometimes, and this goes back a little bit to what I was referencing earlier with Sam, like it's much easier sometimes to strike up a conversation with someone who's making their own interesting project. So like if someone's got a passion project, like, oh, I love making this photography book about this thing. It's almost easier if someone's already got something that they're passionate about, rather than just cold pitching how they want to do something. Because then sometimes it can come across a bit like, yeah, maybe they haven't researched the brand or something. So on the question, should you aim for a pitch to get your foot in the door? I think, again, go back to identifying the problem. Like, what is the problem that this brand haven't figured out yet? And then try and find, like what Tin was saying, like an enterprising, interesting way of getting your foot in the door, because there's also a load of questions in here, like how long can a deck be, how beautiful should a deck be, Tin, mate, and this is slightly different because it's not pitching for work, this is how you got a job at DB, but maybe you could explain how you did that, because I think that was quite a unique way of getting in.
Yeah, I think also like from that story, it's also, I think maybe brands are looking for something, or they say something like, for example, in my case, it was, you need experiences and you need to speak Norwegians. And I didn't have any of those. But for me, it was like kind of, I mean, also being at the school at the time, it was a lot of saying around this topic, like do 1% more than someone else and you will make a big change. So like, for example, just photoshopping what I've done. I mean, I've been following Marcus Olsen on that time on Instagram, and I've screenshotted some of his stories from the DB office, and then I photoshopped myself into those and like added that into the CV, like I would fit nicely, and just put my skills as backpacks, like, I don't know, Germany would be a Hager 30 liter, for example, compared to, I don't know, English, that it's a Hager 90. Adding all these small things and like really result in a big way, because also for me, I was thinking a lot of people do that, but now really seeing how people are approaching us, it's really not that many that are like, do that extra step.
Yeah,
I would say that's like for sure so important. And I think if you are pitching someone that you know and enjoy, either there's a person or a brand, like allow yourself to have fun. Because one of the first things when I also came to the company, it was like, if you have fun, you will do a good job. And I think that's very important here as well. Like, if you and your colleague think it's funny, probably people at the brand will think so as well.
Yeah. I just wanted to fill in, because I think Matthias had kind of a similar question, like how much information should you give in the first quit pitch? And I think we have another guy called Rob, who's one of our like head salespeople. And I think he always has this thing where he says, like, let people walk away with more questions they had before than after. And that's, I think that's a little bit of a thing when you want to, when you pitch, like, give them a good taste and show them that you understand them and that you pitch kind of your unique way of how you can provide extra value to the brand. But don't give them everything, right? Like, make sure that they have tasted the cookie, but they will need to reach out back to kind of see the whole picture. So I don't think it's about being as extensive as possible, but rather actually just kind of a good teaser. But you really need to have done your homework of understanding the brand messaging, and that part as well.
Yeah, one of the things we talk about at our company is like, you've got to earn the right to pitch, really, which I think is an important thing. So I was looking at Andy's question. Should you aim for it? I know we sort of looked at this already, John, but like, if I got a deck out of the blue, which was had a load of deliverables and pricing or something I didn't really know, I'd be a bit like, yeah, I don't know. That's a bit much, really. I think if you've got the relationship, you could possibly do that. But I think you do need to, like, people call it like that wanky phrase, like chemistry meetings or whatever, but I do think there needs to be a period where you work out if you do want to work together. You know, like what happened with John and Sam, you know, the initial email I imagine that came through with this idea, you're then going to follow that up with a bit of a conversation, and you're then going to decide if you want to take it further. Seems to be always the first step, I think. And when people at work for me sort of come to me and say, oh, I've got this brilliant idea for this brand that we want to work with, like, I am always a bit like, have we earned the right to do that? Are we there with that relationship? You know, is that, like, I had it today with someone that's just started working for me because my agency works with DB. And they were a bit like, can we pitch this to DB? And I was just like, no, that's not what we do. You know, like, it's like that's keen and I appreciate it, but that's not what's going on here. You know, you got to read the room a bit, like Callie was saying, you got to kind of understand like when the right time is. So I do think that's really important, because there's a lot of questions here that are talking about, because I get it, like, people are like, well, I've got to start somewhere, I want to cold pitch people, like how far do I go? I would just come back to the point of it, first and foremost, you have to stand out in some way, like before you get to that point. And if you do that, then you earn the right to sort of take it further with decks and deliverables and that nitty-gritty, because if you're talking about that, that's quite far down the line. Like that's quite far in the process. You know, you've probably had a bit of a formal, you know, green light to do that by that point. John,
I had another question, because I appreciate we're also coming up, or we're on time here. And I thought this is actually probably quite a pertinent question for a lot of the folks on this call, especially people like Oscar, Tobias, Callie, Matt. What is the best way? So you've pitched, you've got the work, you've negotiated the fee. What is the best way to make sure that people come back and hire you again? Maybe start with Callie.
Yeah, getting rehired. I mean, as a freelancer, I think that's everyone's goal, is to do a good enough job that they want to hire you again. I think like a lot of the undertone of this entire conversation is just like relationship management and community.
Yeah,
it is kind of like dating. Like you don't just walk up to someone and you're like, pay me money. You know, like that's really jarring. So you just blank pitch someone, like they're not, like you almost get kind of taken back because everyone is a human. And I think with AI and with like being able to copy paste all these pitches, like cold pitching is like almost like, I wouldn't recommend that really. I'm sure there's times where it works, but like in a creative industry, it's like it, you need personality. Yeah, you need some sort of pitch. I got lost on the question there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the question was like, how do you get rehired, was it?
Oh, rehired. Yeah, just following up, having a relationship. So like you, like for instance, I just shot a job for Soho House and it went really well. It was a really fast job. They were working with a brand, Perfect Moment from UK. They needed assets delivered within 6 hours. They told me that ahead of time. So I like shot the event, delivered the assets. I kind of let it breathe for a week because they were like going. And then like, I just sent them another email like, hey, that was really lovely working with you. I would love to shoot for you again. And then they're like, we're thinking about our next campaign. So just kind of like having that relationship, I guess it's kind of like making a friend or trying to date someone. You're just like, follow up, you know, it doesn't have to be a pitch. Just like, hey, I have some availability in my calendar in the next 3 months. If you needed anything, like, I'd love to chat. It's just kind of those like follow ups and relationship building. In my world, that's like how I get rehired, and also just doing a really good job.
Yeah, that's insane.
The thing, one of the things that I've always really liked as a person who is hiring people is like, if you get to go on a shoot or do something for us, like the best person I've ever seen at this is Joe Carlino, who used to work at Transworld Snowboarding. And Joe is crazy. Like, he will go and film all day long and then everyone else will finish the shoot. So it could be a competition, it could be a day filming street snowboarding. Everyone else will go for dinner, get drunk, whatever else. Joe will go to his hotel room and he'll edit you a 30-second highlight reel of the day. And it's crazy. Like, he sends you that and you're just, as the person who's paying for the thing, you're just so stoked on it. And like, if it's a competition or if it's, and he doesn't grade it, he doesn't make it perfect. He's literally just like, yo, this is, some stuff went down today, I want you to see it. And it's crazy, that thing, like, it's so important. I think just kind of stoke it. Like, we have a friend, Phil Young, and he always talks about this, like, just make the person who's paying the bill at the end of the day very happy throughout the whole process.
Yeah, I mean, like Callie said, do a good job and work hard. Yeah. It's quite hard to beat, really.
But like, I think that part, John, I just want to lift it up again, because I think I really, really noticed that, like, make the people that hire you look good. I think for everybody who works on socials and other things, just being able to get a picture that people can use in their decks, or, you know, back of a shoot, just deliver one or two pictures that they can show on Monday or Sunday evening in their Slack or anything. It is such a great small cheat trick of getting rehired. I can tell you that from the brand perspective, at least.
Or just building trust. Because I feel like if you work with a new client, that's always like just what you said, John, just like to always deliver like some shots every day. Just like, this is what we did today. And like just what you said, just like it could be more or less raw or like a quick edit, and they'll make him so much more stoked and confident on your work. But I feel like you've all, Kelly, especially you, summarized, it's just like client satisfaction. For me, that's everything. You're just like having good communication and, yeah, go above and beyond. Don't be a dick. be a good guy. Nice to work.
That's rule. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. No, but I'm surprised that I see some people that like think too highly about themselves once they start working with a company. And I don't know. It's just like they don't treat their clients nicely. And it's like, come on, the client is always right. Of course, yeah, they cannot push it too far, but like, take care of them. That's your job.
What other questions have we got? As an agency, do you go for free pitches or having a fee, even though it makes it small? Interesting one that we actually talked about that this week. We don't charge to pitch. I think some people do in the agency space. We do track how much it costs us to pitch, which is always pretty terrifying, really. But yeah, we don't. I don't feel we're in a position to do that personally. That's ultimate, like, earn your right to pitch. I think if you can turn around and be like, yeah, we'll pitch, but it's going to cost you this much money.
What about the George one? How to pitch for brands? How to pitch brands for adventure writing, content writing to add their own current media package?
I already responded. Take a look at our site. What are we missing? How you would solve things we're missing, and drop us a note, George.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard gig, I would say, first and foremost. Like, that's a really, really niche gig. You know, I do know a few people that make a living from that. There's not many people do that. And most people that have accomplished that are already journalists, firstly, with a pretty big portfolio, with a social, a lot of the stuff that Callie's been talking about, you know, with a social presence. I think you would have to really, really stand out, like, to sort of come at that cold, really. I think that'd be really important to kind of, as we've been talking about, you know, make relationships, build your offering, work out, like, what the problem is. I mean, the one thing you've got going for you is there's a lot of shit content that brands put out. So I think the way in would probably be to kind of tactfully approach it that way. If you could show how what you would do would be different and current and would improve what they do, that'd be the way to go. But that's a tricky one. It's a pretty niche gig for sure. I think most people are more in the Cali camp, where they're doing a lot of different things. They might be working with brands on marketing. They might be, you know, they might be journalists. They might, yeah.
Very good question here from Tom. Probably the most succinct question we've had this evening. Would you ever, okay, Callie, you can answer this one. Would you ever tell a brand their content is shit?
Maybe like, in not in so many words. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like,
yeah, I mean,
highlighting, honestly, problems.
Yeah. I had like a really funny rapport with a client once, where I could say things like that. And it was a very powerful man in Canada, owns a lot of real estate, owned a couple brands, and I told him that. I was like, you're doing a horrible job. And that's just me reading my relationship with him, mm-hmm, and like, yeah, my confidence. But I have gotten a few jobs from being like kind of awkwardly blunt. But that is a skill that you kind of hone over time. But some people, especially when they're really busy, like, they just want it straight. So if you think something is bad and you can do it better, like, go for it. You can try. You might fail a couple of times, but I feel
I can imagine Matt's done that before.
Well, I mean, what I get through the agency is a lot of founder businesses, a lot of founder-led businesses who are, like, if you're going to start your own brand, you've got to be, like, incredibly driven and passionate, you know, and you've got to really think that what you're doing is the most important thing in the world. And obviously that doesn't often translate to the real world. So a scenario that I get a lot, actually, is we'll talk to brands who are founder driven. You know, they're all about the founder, and they're like, I've got the most interesting story in the world. When are you going to get me in the Guardian? You know? And obviously my job at that point is to say, well, you actually don't have the most interesting story in the world, and the Guardian are not going to be interested in that story. So how about we start with, like, Real Street, you know, like, what? So it's really common. And I think what Callie's saying is, again, it's just trust, you know, like, there are different ways to have the trust that will make people listen to you. One of which is to be, you know, for people to think you're really good at what you do and they should listen to you. But it's really about relationships. It's really about, you know, I've had plenty of scenarios where I've thought that, and I've also thought, is that a good idea for me to say that? Probably not. I'm not going to say that, and try and think about it in, like, a different way. Yeah, that's why I was a bit like on the copy conversation, like, I think I said you'd have to approach that really subtly if you were going to do that, because ultimately, mm-hmm, you know, with all this stuff, there's a lot of ego involved. Creativity, it's hard. Creativity is hard. People putting themselves out there, like, there's ego involved. So you have to, you can't just tell people it's shit without a really good reason, you know, because it's rare that it goes down.
Yeah, I've tried that in a cold pitch before. I've messaged this brand I wanted to work with. I knew they were hiring for that. And I just like gave them like a quick like critique. I'm like, your website doesn't even link to this. Like, here's everything you're doing wrong. This is what I can fix. And they were just like, no, thank you. So,
yeah.
And I didn't read the room. And that was like when I was younger. And you learn there's just, you have to have that like relationship. Again, if you apply it to like going up to a stranger on the street and you're like, hey, you're dressed really bad, can I fix you? Like, that is pretty, like, not very comfortable, and the person wouldn't.
That is high gain, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a really good way to think about it, though, isn't it? Because if you are sat at home and you're thinking this brand's doing something wrong, like, obviously you said, you know, everyone said earlier to identify like what a brand is missing and what problems you can find, and then fill that gap. So you are sort of saying that, but you're just presenting a solution rather than a problem based on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got a couple of examples actually from the agency from the last year. So we won a pitch where we did this with a really huge household name brand, and they came to us and they were like, hey, we've reinvented outdoor clothing. Like, you know, and again, we were like, well, you haven't actually. And we said to them in the pitch, like, look, we'll work with you if you're going to listen to us. Like, you know, what we do, like, we've been doing this a long time and we know what we do and we know what we can do for you. If you want to listen to that, we'll work with you. And they were very amenable to that. They were like, that's exactly what we want. So, and that's going really well. We had another brand where we did the same thing, bit different, because ultimately they came to us with this marketing idea, which wasn't very good. And they were like, you need to like build a campaign around this marketing idea. And we spoke long and hard about that. And we were like, let's tell them it's shit in the pitch. And we didn't win, you know, because obviously they were, they didn't really like to hear that. So again, it's like high risk, high gain. Like, on the latter, I didn't really mind that we lost, because my team were gutted about that. They were really upset. You know, they all worked really hard and they all really wanted to win. And I was just a bit like, they'd be a nightmare. You know, if they're not going to listen now, like, when we're down the line and it's, you know, we're actually working with them on budgets, like, it's probably better that we didn't win that, to be honest, like, because you got, as Callie's really clearly and rightly saying, it's a relationship game, all this. So, you know, the more you can kind of, another thing I always say to my team is like, have the difficult conversations as early as possible, because you will have difficult conversations, you know, whether that's like me asking my guy at the brand for double the money on the podcast that I'm doing, whether it's like talking to the big high street brand and saying to them, look, you haven't reinvented outerwear. Like, you know, the earlier you can have those conversations, like, the better your relationship will be. If you need to have those conversations when you're arguing about like a campaign that went wrong, or like the money that you want to, as Callie has also talked about, it's probably not going to go that well. So I think you're always better to talk about early, right? And Andreas, Startup Media Company, I think this has been a couple, hasn't it?
Maybe, and Andreas, maybe you want to give us a little overview of what you do.
Get on the mic.
Let's do it that way.
Oh, where is he? Don't have a mic.
All right. Okay. Let's read your question, Andreas. Just started a business. We're in high school. We do media production, film photography, and the issue of price is something we spend a lot of time on when we're so new. Do you have any tips for a startup media company? Any tips for a startup media company? I suppose we can all approach this, but for me, again, it would be, so I'm 44. Our target audience with DB is much younger than me. I assume Matt has the same issue, that we're older than most of our customer base. And so on the call here, we have Tin, who was probably born a long time after me. William, I know, is our art director. William was born scarily, I think, in like 2002. I don't know, but he's very young. And so if we ever have creative questions, I always try to revert to the youngest person in the room, because they're the closest to the consumer who we're actually trying to work with. When I worked on Nike Women with Callie, Callie was probably the closest person I had who was closest to the consumer that we wanted with Nike. And so I'd probably say for you, Andreas, if you guys are at high school, you know
the
trends, you know the stuff that's coming. Like we were looking today, we're doing a shoot in a few weeks, and we were looking at like the fashion that like 20-year-old girls are wearing. Like, and it's like the fast Oakley sunglasses and all the rest of it. And I was like, I don't even know where to begin with this. So that's why you need, like, I think that's the sort of superpower that you have, Andreas. Like, you guys are young, fast, agile, and use that to your benefit. Callie, I don't know if you have anything to add to that kind of thing, but
yeah, I mean, I always tell people, like, figure out what you want your hourly rate to be is like a really good place to start. So like, say you were working, I don't know, retail before you decided to start this media company. And like, say you made, I don't know, in Canada, it's like $15 an hour is minimum wage. So like, say you wanted, your goal is to make $30 an hour, kind of like baseline from there, especially if you're brand new. Usage and everything is a whole different conversation, and there's tons of websites to pull up for general usage fees for photography specifically. But I'd say just find your hourly rate and go from there, so that you're getting paid at least minimum wage. Like if you're just starting, is a very good place to start.
I think John's really onto something though. You know, ultimately, like the people that have the budgets are going to be a lot older than you, and tell them what they don't know. You know, do work that shows them what they don't know. Like
it's funny that we, so in 2018, I remember being in a room and someone came back from this trade show and they were like, oh, this is what we've seen at this, you know, and all the kids are on this thing called TikTok. And I was like, it's from where? Yeah. And I was like, it's from where? China? Yeah. No, I won't bother getting TikTok. And most days when I see someone blow up on TikTok, I'm like, why didn't I download it at that point? And become, and
it's too late now, John, you can't do it now.
Well, I could have become the biggest dad influencer there is, but I just didn't get ahead of the trend. So no, but it is true, like listen to the younger people, and if you're in a brand, super super relevant.
Yeah, just like show people what they don't know, and you know, make your own work, do your own work, get it out there and get it in front of people. And you know, if it's good, people will come to you. Mike's got a
good question.
This question is a really good one. If communication goes quiet, should you let it go or try to reignite the conversation? That, I mean, that never changes. That is like, I had a conversation about that today with people at my place. You know, I think everyone's got different approaches to that one. Ali, how do you handle that?
If communication goes quiet, like while you're negotiating or just after a job, I guess is what's the situation of this question. I mean, the rule of thumb with negotiating in general is like try 3 times. And then if they don't, then you become one of those AI bot emails. So,
yeah.
If they approach you for a chat, it's going well, and then they bail. I mean, I do this to people all the time by accident, which I think probably John does too. You know, like at businesses, they're really busy. I think also like think about the person you're talking to in their day to day. And so like, I don't know, Marcus, for instance, was just in Las Vegas. So like if I was pitching him and he just went to a trade show, like think that maybe he was just very occupied with the trade show. And so he hasn't like thought to get back to you yet. So like reading the room and thinking about other people's schedules and seasons, like certain brands, like buying seasons are super busy and they might not be thinking about your pitch. So follow up. Yeah. Like 2 or 3 times. And if 3 times, I feel like is kind of it. Maybe I end probably at 2. It just depends how persistent you are. But Joe Carlino, actually the man Jonathan was talking about, when I was very young, he took me under his wing. I started my career kind of in content writing, like blogging. And Joe taught me how to pitch, and his whole thing was persistency. So like, there's this woman, Annie Fash, is the editor of Transworld Snowboarding. And I really wanted to write for Transworld. And he like encouraged me to like, try again, try this, like try a different angle. And it's a fine line about being annoying, but persistency, especially when you're young, I think is the most attractive quality, because younger people are so easy to give up. So I think just being like consistent and persistent is a good one.
Yeah. And like, don't take it personally, like you said, is rule number one for sure. Like, because people are just busy. I mean, you do get time wasters for sure. Like there is definitely a market and a culture of like, let's have a meeting. And then, you know, people think that's them doing their job and they don't really have any intention of like following that up. So I think you have to kind of like try and read, like the phrase that's come up a lot is like read the room, you know. Like, I mean, one of the things that we do at my agency is when we get someone coming to us, which is a little bit different because I know we're talking about pitching, but like, it, you know, ultimately you try to work out if there's work at the end of the trail, aren't you? You know, so we will get people coming to us a lot asking us to pitch. And I would say that like probably 80% of them are time wasters, really, you know, for whatever reason, like they don't have the budget or they're just exploring or they just want to, I mean, I've had people get me to pitch so they can get my rates. You know, they've had no interest in like working with me. They just want to see how I pitch and get my rates. So what I do now is I have a list of questions that I send to people, like when they approach me cold. And basically those questions are designed to weed out the time wasters. So like one of the questions is, how much money have you got? You know, because if someone doesn't want to answer that question, then that's the end of the conversation. But it's really designed to, you know, the questions are basically like, what are you trying to achieve from this? Why do you want to work with an agency? Do we need to come up with your stories or do you have stories? Do you have a plan or do we need to come up with a plan? It's quite basic stuff. But from that week, it is a filter to weed out the time wasters, basically. And I've kind of learned that that's really useful to save the time that we need. When it comes to scenarios such as, you might have pitched and you're waiting for a decision and you are really quite keen to understand like what's going on so you can, for example, plan whether you're going to have money the next month. Yeah, it's tricky. You know, I think you have to, I think Callie's kind of nailed it. Like you can push it to a point, but people know, you know, people know like whether, you know, if you're being ghosted after a while, you kind of get the hint, don't you? So at that point, it's probably best to just kind of walk away. But what I found as well is like, sometimes you think those leads have gone and then like a year later, somebody will come back and go, oh, hey, it's me. I've got a job. Can you start tomorrow? You know, and that's obviously why it's really good to not burn bridges and get frustrated and take it personally. You know, I think you should always probably think about the fact that like, it's kind of like died a little bit, but it might come back in the future. So you might as well just part on good terms. I mean, I often just reply like, oh, you're obviously really busy. No worries. Totally get it. I'm around when you want to, you know, when you want to chat and have a good one. See you in a bit. And, you know, that's the best you can do, really. John.
All right, Aaron, this is a great question. Oscar, since you're on, I think Oscar and Callie, if you two could answer this one, because I assume you've both been in these situations. Aaron?
Yeah, that's a brilliant, that is such a great question, isn't it? That's brilliant.
Aaron, have you got a mic there? Okay. I'll ask it then. So as a photo DIT, this is going to make me look like an idiot. Someone tell me what a DIT is.
Anyone? Digitech. What kind of?
Okay. But there we go. Thank you.
I'm reading the question.
Yeah, right. It's like TikTok, John.
I think
I was expecting Marcus to help. Okay, come on then, Marcus. Okay,
Oscar. Working with digital and other people, so I think this one is good for either Kaylee or Oscar.
Many times I'm assisting.
I meet a lot of people from. Many times I'm assisting on sets. I see myself working on. Is it okay to strike up a connection with said people with the aim of potential collaboration, or is that unprofessional towards the photographer that's currently hired? Aaron, I can see you now. Have you got audio? Yes. But I can't hear you for some reason. Still can't hear you. Anyway, all good. I think you know the question, Oscar. Give us the, how would you handle this if Aaron was on your set and he was pitching, or if he was trying to make friends with everyone else on set in the aim of getting some work down the lines?
I think it's fine. Like, I've had scenarios, or like overall, I would say it was cool. I've had scenarios though where I had brought in a second shooter, did an awful job, and then go to directly to client, and it's like, hey, if you need a photographer, I'm your guy. And I'm like, dude, not cool, man. And yeah, same guy. Yeah, almost lost that client thanks to him.
Okay, Kelly.
But I feel like, yeah, as a DIT, yeah, I think that's cool too, because I feel like, it's for the start, someone brought you in, and then you can network with other assistant photographers or the producer. I feel like that's how I get jobs. So yeah, no hard feelings at all.
Mm-hmm. To Oscar's point, I mean, that's like how the entire industry works. It's like, yeah, you go on one, you meet some people, but I think it's just timing, like focus on the job at hand, make sure everything is going great. Like, I wouldn't connect with a photographer while they're like in their creative phase. I think that's really rude. All of that, like networking, is kind of like lunch break after shoot. And that's like when you really can have those relationships. But again, it's not like something you just, hey, if you ever need someone to hire again, it's just like meeting them, introducing yourself, make sure they remember your name. And like, it's just networking. But yeah, definitely like wait until the job at hand is under control. I find it very annoying if somebody's like thinking about other work. It's like disrespectful. And to Oscar's point, like I had a photo assistant kind of do that same thing, like essentially try to like steal the client from me. And that's like a very easy way to never get hired again. To Marcus's point, just like make your boss look good. Whoever's hiring you, make them look amazing, and you will continue to get hired. And when they can't get a job, when they can't do a job, they will give you the job and you will get that job as the lead. But if you burn
very well said, very nice.
Amen. That's an easy way to not be rehired.
Well said.
Thank you for the answer. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Aaron. Since we're already half an hour over what we said, and in respect to everyone's time, I think we'll pull it to a close there. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. That was amazing. Matt, thank you. We didn't hear the seagulls.
Good. They're out there.
And yeah, thank you very, very much for everyone who joined in. Stockholm, Portugal, Innsbruck, Cannes, France, California, Bergen, Italy, Switzerland, Istanbul, Rivermar, South Tyrol, Slovakia, Kranj, Slovenia, Helsinki, Edinburgh, Bucharest, and Santa Teresa, British Columbia, New Zealand, Canada, Schladming, Scottish Highlands, Vienna, Munich, North Devon. Go on, Marcus.
Before everybody pops off, talking about this, making us look good and be able to continue with this, it would be amazing if you can slide into our at DB's Instagram DM and just thank for the chat or write an honest review. We would love feedback on how we can make these better, so we can continue and, you know, provide good value. So if you have any suggestions of topics you want us to cover, if you have any specific person you would like us to talk with on a certain subject or anything like that, please send us a DM so we can continue with this and touch on good topics and go deeper into things. That would be amazing.
Right on.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
If anyone's got any specific questions, like, I'm happy to answer them. So just, yeah, give a DM. I'll put the old Insta. I'll take a leaf out of Marcus's book and put the Insta in the chat. There we go. All right. Here we go.
Mine on there.
Cheers. Honolulu in the house. All right. Thanks, everyone, and cheers, DB Legends, for this.
Ciao, Matt. When's your flight, John?
In 1 hour. So I will see the folks in Oslo tomorrow. So,
Kaylee, thank you so much for popping on. It was very insightful and fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Have a nice evening, everyone. Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Ciao. I'll stay and cook food. So if anybody has any more questions, Oscar, I know we anyway need to catch up about car branding and stuff. So.
Okay, I'm going to leave you guys to it.
Ciao, John.
Have a nice
evening. Bye. Bye. That's always the best part of these calls.
Yes, the ending.
Dude, I want to listen to that car talk, but I need to go eat dinner. So next time.
I got to figure out.
Have a good evening. I actually got to go for a lunch meeting. But hey.
Oh, shit.
Thanks all.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Okay, Marcus, talk soon. Bye.
Talk soon. See you, buddy.
Yeah.
How was it? Was it good? Fine?
Yeah, I liked it very much.
Daniel, what did you think?
It was awesome. It's always good to be on the call and hear the perspectives and just to get an idea of what like brands kind of look for or see, and like that originality is still something that soars above other things, is just awesome to hear.
Yeah, and I think like the most people that we've hired, I mean, either like creatives or people that has joined the company, has come with like, you know, being a little bit original and dare to kind of stand out. And I think that's in the pitches as well. So that's always been a kind of a good call out.
No, totally. And just, I don't know, the perspective of like actually pitching yourself as well and being honest and your own person, like, is very, I guess it's like, it's so clear, but at the same time, like when you're pitching to something, you're always a little bit afraid how they're gonna take you or how they're gonna see you. And yeah, I think that's just super cool to find the niche and just go for it and actually just have the wit to just go for it sometimes and see what happens. You can always get a no, but you can always try to get a yes. So
yeah, and I think on that point as well, I think there, we talked about it, that on another creative exchange, but this, like, you know, how nice does the pitch need to be in the website and stuff? And I think most creatives are ever stuck in the loop of trying to perfect their portfolio or website, where I don't think that's normally what the brands listen to, or kind, or of course they look at it at some point, but I think like actually coming with like a way of how to solve their problem is so much more sharper than having a well-curated website that's up to date. And I don't think I have ever hired somebody on like their website, but like, you know, it could have been, of course we check references and other work they've done, but it's not on, you know, if it's a fancy website, it could be, you know, link to two videos or link to a job that is live somewhere else.
That's such a good point. Like sometimes I feel like I get lost in like editing pixels, like where I think it's going to like matter to somewhere, but it's actually just more about getting it out there and being seen. And yeah, that's such a good point.
So there you go. That was the first of a couple of these roundtable creative exchanges I'm going to be putting live in the next week or so. And I hope you enjoyed it. Big thank you to Callie again and the DB gang for that one. We're chatting, these are going so well that we're chatting about doing a couple of them live and in person in the coming months. So I will be mentioning this on the pod. I think there's chat about doing one in London, maybe even one in Amsterdam, if I'm correct. So I'll keep you posted on those. I've got another one of these that I'm going to put up in the next week or so alongside regular episodes. Yeah, I'm turning the content machine on for the next couple of weeks. Let's put it that way. That one was about the ethics of travel in the modern age with panelists Kepa Acero, Tim Myers and more. And it was another extremely interesting conversation, quite in line with the themes I've been exploring, whether it's through my conversations with Gavin Ferney-Jones, or the lift, the back and forth that a lot of people seemed interested in between Gavin and Chris Moran recently about the lift being built in Bozell and what that says to our attitudes about climate change. So yeah, that one's in keeping with that conversation. So I'd love to know what you think about this episode. You can leave me a comment on the aforementioned Substack page, www.lookingsideways.substack.com. Actually, I don't think you need the prefix for that. I think you can just do lookingsideways.substack.com. Yeah, you can leave me a comment. You can also read 3 previously paywalled articles I took from behind the paywall after this episode on freelancing and my work with my agency ACM, which do expand on a lot of the points made in this episode that you just listened to. Mainly, I decided to put those free, like I say, because there's such an appetite for this stuff. And while you're on the Substack page, why not give it a share? I read recently, and I can believe it from experience, that a mere 1% of people actually act upon the calls to action you hear on podcasts such as this. You know, there's stuff like give it a share, give us a review and all that, which seems mad, especially given the number of I can't afford a paid subscription, but I love what you're doing, so please keep it up messages that I receive every week. In fact, I got a nice one the other day from somebody who had just made the jump to paid subscriber saying, "Hi, Matt, it was a joy to read your freelancer posts. Long-time lurker of the pod and consumer of your freebies, but they drove me to pay up immediately. Yours is a vital voice within our strange little niche, and these posts made me blush with guilt that I've not signed up sooner. Cheers from a fellow freelancer and firm believer in rules 3 and 4. So that was nice. Now, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, paying for something like this is obviously fairly down most people's priorities list. But if you are enjoying it and you do want me to keep it going, as I hear quite frequently, the best thing you can do is do some sharing. There's a big button on the Substack page. It's free. It takes about 0 seconds and it helps spread the word and helps me do more of these things that people seem to enjoy. So yeah, that'd be great. Nice one. All right, that's it for now. Big up for DB for organizing it and for the 15% off for my HKC family. I'll be back soon with more of the usual. But in the meantime, thanks for tuning in and I'll catch you next time. Nice one.